Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never. And, you know, there's plenty of things to cover. There's all sorts of things that we just got to talk about. Folks, the insanity is going to continue. Trains on tracks are going to derail and harm, damage, kill. Planes are going to fly into food processing plants. All of these things are continuing to happen. And as a matter of fact, the unfortunate fact that because we're using the industrial education system, as long as you have all of your children sitting in a classroom, they're always going to be vulnerable. And they're even more vulnerable today as we allow this to continually persist, because we are not teaching, nor have we taught, the existing generation the importance of accountability, responsibility, and so forth, which is why, you know, unfortunately, we are becoming the victim of the design. This is social engineering. All I can tell you folks is it's going to get worse. It's going to continue happening. You know, when people say, oh, we need armed guards just because of the tragic shooting at the school, doesn't mean that that is a real solution. Actually not. We need to, because as long as we continue using the existing education system the way it is designed, we can never get on top of this. It's about time the children revolt against the education system. It's about time the children revolt against this blind acceptance to indoctrination. Your children would be far better off, you know, because you hear me speak out against homeschooling, because just homeschooling doesn't solve the problem. We have to dismantle the education system. Look how much money is involved in this. You know, I understand that there's lots of people out there that have kids that, you know, because they don't have the education, they haven't put themselves in a position to be able to take care of their kids and educate their kids. They need this national babysitting system to take care of them. And so, you know, they want to trust us, or, you know, trust the nation with babysitting, and they want to hold them accountable. Well, actually, you made the decision to have children. It's your responsibility to make sure that what is best for them is provided them. You throwing them over the wall into the arms of these militant educators, these ideologues who want to actually teach your children destructive education, destructive paradigms. I hate to say it, but this is what we're weeping. I should say reaping and weeping. Anyway, don't forget that debt clock is fraud. There's nothing legitimate about it. Now, we were talking on Friday about, and I didn't get a chance to go through a comparison, and I challenged you to go through a comparison, and I realized that what really has to happen is we need to do that comparison. Because I'm all for, you know, putting it all on the table. And as a matter of fact, our petitions have been out there for a long time. And as a matter of fact, we challenge anybody to, you know, if there's ways we can make this better, please let us know. Let us know how our First Amendment petition could improve in language. Is there something we're missing in the Constitution that is absolutely integral and necessary to point out, so that we clearly communicate the requirements of the law? Let us know. Now, what I did, and I'll invite everybody to go to wethepeople2.us. And if you go to, because let me pull up the website so I can kind of walk you through it. When you're at the wethepeople2.us, then there's this current action items up at the very top with these little drop-down menus, and they have the stop the invasion, right? And when you scroll down, you'll actually see these two documents, one to the left, where they just want you to go ahead and sign digitally here. Now, here's my question. When you go through this, because I posed the same question with the We the People Foundation and, you know, other organizations that do this, how do you verify that the person signing this petition is a U.S. citizen? Is that important? Well, absolutely it is, because only citizens have a right to demand the law, and they're the only ones that have a right to petition government. They're the only ones that have a right of being protected, you know, their privileges and immunities being protected by the government. When we really look at the importance of citizenship, we want to make sure, because there's lots of illegals here, and they have no right to petition government. They have no right of due process. They have no right to be protected of the privileges and immunities only afforded to you as a citizen. They don't even have a right to vote. And we make this case because that's exactly what the Constitution says. Not because the courts have redefined it, but that is the absolute language of the Constitution. It's not, if they want to change what we're doing to allow illegals to vote, then give us the amendment to allow it. Don't sit there in your black robes and actually edict that we think that it's okay and therefore, yea, verily, they can vote. No, it does not work that way. Ah, but they've been doing that for years and years. And this is why counties matter most is a very important document, because we prove how they've been redefining things of the Constitution that they have no authority to do. The only entity that has the authority to dictate what is constitutional, what isn't constitutional, is right there in Article 5. Right there in Article 5. So, all that being said, let's download, because on the right-hand side, you can download, edit, and sign. So what you're looking at are two identical documents. And so if you download that, and then you go to reclaimingtherepublic.org, and you go to the petitions button, it's on the right-hand side, the side menu is on the right, click on the button that says petitions, and then go down to petition 3, and petition 3 will basically be the petition that is dealing with the invasion. It's the guarantee clause of the Constitution. And so what we want to do is, I think it's really important that we do comparisons. You know, who is actually laying the case? Now, could the case be better? Absolutely. We invite any type of criticism, comment, what have you, regarding these petitions, because we want them to be comprehensive in dictating the law of what must be happening by every public servant, like it or not, that is the law. And we are to actually, the law is our king, and we are to have this rule of law where the law must be followed. And therefore, diving into this lawful notice of maladministration to all executive branch officers in Texas. Now, I don't know what branch officers are, executive branch officers, but I'm going to presume that's the governor and maybe mayors and so forth. And so right off the top, to me, it looks like this document, because it doesn't look like a petition. So this document looks like it is an administrative action that is aimed towards the executive in our form of government. Now, the essence of our government is what? Republican, isn't it? You hear me say this all the time. Who are the sovereigns? Who have the responsibility of making sure that things are going right? If the governor's not doing his job, who is actually supposed to enforce that? Not the courts. Your representatives. And you know what? I get this from representatives. Oh, we're not enforcement. We're not the cops. No, you are the sovereigns. You are to make sure that the laws are being followed, and you have tools in your possession to actually remove governors. If they are failing to support the U.S. Constitution, you have the U.S. Constitution to remove them with. which is Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. So as we realize, and you, as listeners here, you know that we're pretty well abreast with every little component of the Constitution, and we want to make sure we include those. Because when you do that in context to the supreme law of the land, it refutes any other way, any other doctrine, any other argument. It's an irrefutable argument. This is what must be done. Okay, so notice to agent is notice to principal, and notice to principal is notice to agent. I think that right there is court language. And so, interesting, again, so this is going to the executive with some court language, and then it says, I, blank, one of the people, as seen in the 50 state constitutions. I don't understand that. And I don't understand why it is not a citizen of the United States for America. But anyway, Republican in form, sui juris, all legal sounding, do present you this notice that you and your agents may provide due care. Due care. Not redressing the grievances, but just due care. And then please take notice is an assertion. It's a kind of requesting, can you please take notice? What happens if they don't take notice? If I read that and say, please take notice that the people have taken the time to do the proper study to be able to come together and have assembled in an orderly and peaceful manner to give instructions to their officers and representatives to deal with matters of the common good and observe fundamental principles. Okay, so are you telling me that this is what you've done? Is this something you have the right to do? Are you asserting some right, like maybe your First Amendment right of assembly and your First Amendment right of petitioning? No, they're not even mentioning that. They're just saying that they have come together and they've studied this. And now for the common good and fundamental principles as governor. So this is actually being directed to the governor. You have been entrusted with delegated powers in order to protect and keep the people of Texas safe from those who invade or may attempt to invade or conquer this state in accordance with the laws of the land and the Constitution's rules and regulations. Following authorities are cited below. Okay, so here's this, now we're getting to the meat. You know I love meat. The people have a right in orderly and peaceable manner to assemble, to consult upon the common good, give instruction to their representatives, and to request the legislative body by the way of addresses, petitions, or remonstrances, redress of the wrongs done them and of the grievances they suffer. Guess whose constitution that is. Now we're petitioning the Texas governor here, and they're referencing the Massachusetts state constitution. How much validity does the Texas governor have when you're inflicting upon him the law of Massachusetts? Help me out here, folks. Help me out. Is this really applicable? Can the governor really look at this and say, wow, they've really got me here? The jurisdiction of the Massachusetts Constitution has zero jurisdiction over anybody in Texas. Now, the one constitution that has jurisdiction over every state, every person in the United States is the U.S. Constitution. Why not use the U.S. Constitution here instead of the Massachusetts Constitution? Just providing, you know, the obvious criticism. It does not make sense at all why they would invoke a Massachusetts constitution for the Texas governor. Quote again, a frequent recurrence to the fundamental principles of the Constitution and constant adherence to those of piety, justice, moderation, temperance, industry, and frugality are absolutely necessary to preserve the advantages of liberty and to maintain a free government. The people ought consequently to have particular attention to all of these principles in the choice of their officers and representatives and have a right to require of their lawgivers and magistrates an exact and constant observance of them in the formation and execution of the laws necessary for the good administration of the Commonwealth. Again, this is a citation out of guess whose constitution? Massachusetts. Again, it's just a waste of space because it has no relevance to a Texas governor. I mean, it's like it's like basically asking a U.S. citizen for their Russian passport. They shouldn't have one, and there should be no jurisdiction over them from Russia, period. I mean, it's one thing to say, here's the U.S. Constitution, but I'm not getting this citation. It's absolutely irrelevant. But the next line is, please take notice. Again, please take notice. It's the power is exuding from that, right? That the sole and only legitimate end of the institution, maintenance, and administration of government is to secure the existence of the body politic to protect it and to furnish the individuals who compromise it with the power of enjoying in safety and I mean, this is all fluff, right? Tranquility, their natural rights, and other functions as usurpation and oppression. From when those in a limited government go beyond the bounds of the Constitution. I mean, this is kind of, again, this is all just fluff stating the obvious that, you know, we shouldn't be encumbered by unconstitutional laws. Stating the obvious. Now the objective of government, that the sole object and only legitimate end of government is to protect the citizens in the enjoyment of life, liberty, and property. And when the government assumes other functions, it is a usurpation and oppression. Guess where that citation's from? Yeah, you're going to say Massachusetts, but no, it's not the Massachusetts Constitution. It is a constitution, though, and no, it's not Texas again. It's Alabama. So now they're citing a great line that is provided for the good people of Alabama in this Texas instructions, affidavit, administrative process, whatever this is. Now there's this Tucker Blackstone Volume 1, Appendix Note B, Section 3, 1803. If in a limited government, the public functionaries exceed the limits which the Constitution prescribes to their powers, every act is an act of usurpation in the government and such treason against the sovereignty of the people. Now, I'm not sure what a Tucker Blackstone volume is, but this might be an edited version of Blackstone's commentaries. I'd have to actually look at this, and I just don't have the time. But it's not relevant. This is just a commentary, and you got to remember that Blackstone himself and his commentaries on the law had everything to do with the British law, the monarchical theocracy of Britain. They didn't have a constitutional republic that was very unique as we did. And therefore, I mean, these are nice things, and most people would read that and go, I agree with that, but relevance. It is not a demand by the law of what must be done. Quote, treason against the state shall only in levying war against it or adhering to its enemies, giving them aid and comfort, and no person shall be convicted of treason except on the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act or confession in open court. Well, that's a common line, and actually that's out of the Texas Constitution, talking about treason against the state, adhering to the enemies, giving them aid and comfort. Now, I can tell you right now that there's all sorts of wordsmithing that has been done by judges and judiciaries and other lawmakers to say, we don't define treason anymore as just this aid and comfort. And it's all unconstitutional, the way they've changed the meaning of treason. But clearly, this is the one tooth here, but they have to tie how this is treasonous. It just basically says, well, you're giving aid and comfort. Well, is what they're doing wrong? Are they violating the law? Where is the specific language of the law here? Don't see anything yet, right? They just talked about invaders and invading, but there's no citation of the law. Right, I go back up to the top. Texas, the people of Texas, or you know, I'll go even further. delegated powers in order to protect and keep the people of Texas safe from those who invade or may attempt to evade or conquer the state in accordance with the laws. So give me those laws, right? Come on, give me meat. And it's not there. So the next thing we dive into is, please take notice that this is your duty to execute the uniform naturalization laws passed by the United States in Congress assembled and carried them into effect to stop foreign invasion of the state by all ways, enterprises, and means whatsoever. Every member of the government, whether they are appointed or elected, is a trustee and servant of the people and is by implied or express contract obligated by the oath. Okay, so I'm getting this, but where's the citations? And more importantly, why are we pointing to the naturalization laws? Folks, naturalization laws, the Uniform Act of creating naturalization laws that Congress has done, that dictates the process of an immigrant becoming a U.S. citizen, a legitimate immigrant. There is no legitimacy to a person that does not come here and actually applies to be a, because they created the law. You want to come here, you have to come through a port of entry to register that your intent is to become an immigrant. Or, because if that's the case, then they'll basically turn you around and go home and say, okay, we'll let you know when we have room for you. Because that is the process of immigration. And the naturalization process is, once you've come here as an immigrant, you have so many years to prepare yourself, to learn the language and everything else, be tested, and then be sworn in, other words, naturalized. The naturalization process is the logical and legal process for an immigrant once their immigration status has been accepted. The process to apply, you can go to your embassy in a foreign nation. You can send a letter to the State Department to say, I would like to immigrate to the United States. There's these processes. But the individual must request an immigration status. In other words, they have to apply to say, I want to be a U.S. citizen and I would like to immigrate to the United States. That is an action by the individual. There's another action by the individual that is a legitimate immigration action, that you come to a port of entry. You report yourself as one who wants to become a citizen and immigrate to the United States. That is it. You come across a line past, don't go to a port of entry, and you try to just get into the United States. You're trespassing, you're violating our laws, and you're absolutely invading this nation by definition. Now, when you read our petition, we actually hold your hand and we go through all of this. And we actually cite Article 1, Section 8. We actually cite these things. And we go into the details of this stuff. We spell this out specifically. We don't beat around the bush and use just fluff in talking about the issues. So what I'm trying to do, again, we're making these comparisons between some, you know, legal course, a legitimate, lawful course. You can use affidavits like this that we the people have, and you can actually throw that into the court and throw that up to your executive, and you know, but where is the teeth? Where is the teeth? And so as we move on here, let me kind of just dump down. By allowing thousands of undocumented and unvetted foreigners to infiltrate our communities, you have unequivocally failed to secure the rights and safety of the people and to uphold your oath to the trust in indenture. Anyway, so we'll leave it right there. When we come back, we're going to kind of wrap up this document, and then we're going to dive into the real meat that we have in our petition. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back because we want to do a compare and contrast. And then you can tell me, how can we make these things better?
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so moving on, this back to the We the People 2 and their administrative document. This has exposed the people to serious threats to their lives, liberty, and property by placing the needs of immigrants above those. They're calling them immigrants. You know, they use the word invade and the action of invasion, but they don't call them invaders. Why? Because that's what they are. They're invaders. They're trespassers. They're lawbreakers. Okay, anyway, have depleted our natural and productive resources, endangered our economy, crowded our cities, towns, overtaxed our legal and educational systems, placed undue pressure on our state's emergency shelter system, which is already capacity. I mean, this is wah, 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 wah. I mean, come on. Wah, 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 wah. This is bad. You're doing bad things. By providing immigrants who have illegally entered into Texas and who lack savings, a job, I mean, hold on here. They lack legality and legitimacy. Who cares about their jobs? Who cares about, you know, the fact that they're here putting a strain on the system? They have no business to be here, and the Constitution is very clear on this, folks. This is an invasion, and there's only one thing to do with invaders. The Constitution lays it out specifically. They are to be repelled, not held, not, you know, caught and released and given due process, because doing all of that creates a burden. It creates an undue, illegal burden. They're not allowed due process, even though the court does it. Why does the court want to give these guys due process? Because every case that goes in front of a court, cha-ching, is money to the court. Because we've created a financial incentive to have as many cases as possible, it's great to have a burden. Because then we got enough lawyers. We need more lawyers. It's, in other words, it's like the union taking over, and that's exactly what we have. We're actually being ran by the interests of others, what serves them, instead of actually following the law. Anyway, by providing migrants, again, they're calling them migrants, not invaders, who have illegally entered Texas, who lack savings, jobs, sponsors, or plan, exclusive privileges, not afforded to the people, you have not only provided unlawful aid and comfort to the foreigners, but have done so at the expense of the people. Look, it's stating the obvious, right? Housing, meals, translators, college, transportation, phones, monthly stipends. Regardless of political leanings, we are a nation of laws and not of men, and of such you are bound to exact adherence to the law. These fail. So give me the law here. I'm dying for the law now. I mean, I haven't read it yet. Where is Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 14? Where is Article 4, Section 4? Okay, well, now we got a little quote. Maxim of law. This is a case law case. There is no stronger link or bond between men than an oath, close quote. But this is Jenkins, Sent case, 126, blah, blah, blah. I mean, in other words, he's just citing something that came from court. Who cares? Let's just cite the Constitution. Please take notice. Again, another please take notice that it is the people who alone have incontestable, inalienable, and indefeasible right to institute government and reform, alter, or complete it. But he's not talking about people. actually, he's placing context to people, but it must be citizens. Does that mean that China can just, you know, the people of China, because there's so many of them, they can all vote and determine what the government is going to be in some far distant land like the United States? Because unless you're in context that the citizens of this land did form and institute a very specific government, now we're talking. We're talking on the principles and foundations of how this nation was built. Anyway, whenever the public's protection, safety, prosperity, happiness so demanded, and it is our right to instruct our representatives, where is that right? Ah, that's in the Bill of Rights. But he didn't even focus on that. He didn't even use the Bill of Rights. I mean, my hat's off to the individual who actually wrote this. I don't know who wrote it. I'm not trying to pick on him. But my hat's off on the ability and the audacity of not using, dancing around the actual laws themselves and bringing in these cursory things, I guess because we're all to presume that the laws actually exist. And I'm here to tell you, because of our illiteracy, nobody even knows what exists in those laws. This is why you must cite them. This is why you must point to them and give the strict language and give the definitions as they were defined. Anyway, another maxim of law, this is, it looks like possibly Blackstone. Actually, no, this is possibly a case law. A delegated power cannot be again delegated. Power can never be delegated to the authority said to delegated never possessed itself. The Mercantile Bank, the Blacks, these are two case laws. And then they go down further and say, please take further notice that we demand that all public servants, trustees, and agents begin at once to take the necessary action to protect the interests of the people whom you are bound to serve by the securing the state from further invasion. Interesting, I like the language right there, but you've still yet to actually tie them to that language. You have to put the chains of the words around their necks, hands, and legs. You have to basically strap them down to the law by saying, this is the law, quote, citation, this is where it is, and using the U.S. Constitution as the supreme law. Do we need, and I would even include the supremacy clause of Article 6. So this is why, to me, there's a huge difference, because I just go through, there's really nothing left in that paragraph that talks any citation of the Constitution. Notice of liability. Now here's the next one. Please take notice that the people can never be secure from tyranny if there is no means to escape until they are perfectly under it, and therefore it is self-evident that they have a right not only to reject it, but to prevent it, and go on and on. And I still do not see a citation of the law. Nothing. Not one mention of Article 4, Section 4, or Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 14. And Article 6, the oath of office, that they are legally bound and required to support this Constitution. And the Supremacy Clause, that only laws that are in pursuant to the Constitution. Why are we not actually hitting? Because see, folks, when I go, you took an oath and you're legally bound to support this Constitution. Wow, that's a slug right in between the eyes. That is a hard impact. You must do this because you're legally bound. And then actually reading those things that they're legally bound to. That Congress has the power to call forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrection, and repel invasions. There you go. Pow, it's another. That's a big black eye right there. You got to repel these invasions. There's nothing of due process, catch and release. You are failing to execute this law by failing to call the militia to repel them. These are nice worded petitions that have no teeth and no meat. But here's the interesting thing. We want to close, or they want to close, you know, with this nice little long excerpt from John Locke's Two Treatises of Government. Section 219, Section 220, and some maxims, some other quotations and so forth. What does John Locke and his comments. I mean, these are good theoretical comments. They're applicable in general, but they're not applicable in specifics. When you go into the ratification base, that's applicable in specifics. Why not use ratification citations? Boy, what would the power be if you actually cited how they are responsible when they were justifying the Constitution and the act of ratifying it, how the states were responsible of ensuring the federal government would repel invaders in that process and so forth, how it was stipulated. Man, that would be... But John Locke? That's interesting. We could open up the Bible, too, and find some really interesting language. And I'm okay with adding ancillary information, but you have to build a foundation on the law first. You have to lay that out. So I'm not going to bother with the rest of these case laws and that, but this is how it closes. Furthermore, if you disagree and believe any of these claims are untrue, you must... I mean, why? Is there some law that you're claiming that I must, as a governor, respond by affidavit sworn under penalty of perjury? I mean, where am I held to this? This is not a First Amendment petition demanding for the redress of grievances. See, that is the one act that is actually protected, because when you petition government, and when we petition our government in America, that's our representatives, right? We're to be Republican in form. So the people that represent us are to be petitioned. Not, I mean, you can petition the governor in tandem with petitioning your representatives to tell them that they need to remove him because they have the power to do so. Where does that power come from? It comes from Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. No one can be a senator, representative, governor, a public servant of any layer that, while under oath of office to support the Constitution, and they fail to support the Constitution, ergo, they are immediately disqualified and to be removed because they can no longer be a public servant and are to be banned for life. Boom. That is the law. Why would you not include that in here? And then again, they go here. This very last part, because it kind of jumps out. The power of the people have delegated, and therefore you are relieved of duty and shall be personally liable for the statutory violations, as well as provide remedy of $7,000 individually per incident for people impacted by this. What? I mean, okay, they're citing these things, but where is this based upon? Is this in the Constitution that there's a $7,000 fine, or... It sounds like they're trying to cite some statutes of the immigration. But bottom line, folks, Congress has obviated, and they call this an immigration crisis when this has nothing to do with immigration, because I'm telling you, immigration is initiated by the individual. As we've covered this, the ability to migrate people, to the importation of persons, is not the same as immigration. There was only 20 years under this constitutional republic that the states were allowed to control and actually import people. After that, the importation of persons ended and immigration became the standard. That if you were going to immigrate to the United States, you had to immigrate via the process of making acknowledgments. And we've gone through an uniform act of naturalization, because even then, they didn't necessarily have to immigrate through the federal government. But over time, because it became problematic, and in pursuant to Article 1, Section 8, and having a uniform rule of naturalization, the government actually dictated that no person can just go straight into a state. They have to come in through a federal port of entry to report themselves in the desire of becoming a citizen, so that at that point they can keep track of you. That way they know whether you're a good citizen or not. We've covered this to ad nauseum as far as I'm concerned. But that right there is the We the People 2. I'll call it the administrative process, administrative function. Now, in our petition, we start off with pursuant to, in other words, in pursuance of Article 1, Article 4, Article 6, and the 1st and 14th, 15th Amendments, the 24th, 26th Amendments. Why are we adding the 19th, 24th, 26th, and the 15th Amendment? Why are those four amendments being added? Because it clearly states in all four of those amendments of voting that the only person that has a right to vote in America is a U.S. citizen. They must be fully naturalized or natural born. Therefore, that's why we're adding that, because we're going to go through this. It's a 14-page document. And so we basically lay this out, and we did this for Bremer County. So if you download it, this is what you're going to see. And so the very first whereas, the jurisdiction as defined in the Virginia ratification debates on the adoption of the federal Constitution were succinctly asserted by James Madison that the powers of the federal government are enumerated. It can only operate in certain cases. It has legislative powers on defined and limited objects which it cannot extend its jurisdiction. And it provides the citation, and there's actually a little footnote. And you can go to it's nice to have footnotes so that you can actually go read to make sure that that citation is, you know, spot on. I don't understand why people don't include it, but we the people, too, please start adding footnotes so that people can at least verify what you're saying is accurate. And then it gives them actually an opportunity to understand what you're really citing there. Is this just case law, or is this relevant from, you know, the Constitution or ratification debates, what have you? Anyway, whereas the jurisdiction, this is the second paragraph, whereas the jurisdiction as defined in the Virginia ratification base, that's what I just read, whereas one specific responsibility and power delegated to the general government within Article 4, Section 4, referred to as the Guarantee Clause, quote, that the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion, close quote. So right there, we just laid the law down that the United States guarantees to protect them from an invasion. Okay, the next paragraph. Whereas the framers did not specify this to be a military invasion, thus the reason for a lack of clarity in the Constitution that they were well aware of the historical context of theological combatants and religious invasions. A specific religious invasion doctrine referred to as Hijra doctrine is an Islamic policy principle of jihad by migration. This doctrine calls for Mohammedans to mass migrate into non-believer nations and entrench themselves into that nation without assimilating, seeking to undermine and overthrow the host government by exploiting democracy along with accelerating growth in the Mohammedans' population. They accelerate growth by both continuing aggressive immigration, or actually migration, because they're not immigrating, they're just coming, and by violating the nation's laws by practicing polygamy, openly claiming religious rights, or doing it secretly when the host country's laws will not allow it. This way, the Mohammedans are able to have as many children as possible until they can commandeer a nation to subjugate it to Islam. The Zoroastrians of Persia, formerly known, that we know now today as Iran, were conquered and forced into practicing Islam by this doctrine, completely eradicating the Zoroastrian faith. And whereas the fundamental definition of an invasion is an act or instance of invading or entering as an enemy, especially by an army. That's one. Two, the entrance of an advert or anything troublesome or harmful or disease. Three, entrance as if to take possession or overrun. Four, infringement by intrusion. These are the definitions of an invasion. How can you not consider when one person does this, whether it's to cause harm, whatever, it doesn't have to be a mass. An invasion could be one person. Whereas, during the state's debates of the federal Constitution, the concept of migrations westward of the United States and obtaining sovereignty over the Mississippi River referred to as key strategic interest to the security of the Republic. This was the foundation of what would be referred to or referred almost a half a century later as the doctrine of manifest destiny. Consequently, the framers were all aware of the history of their states as colonies and that New York was once settled by the Dutch citizens and not an accompanying army. Once discovered, the English colonists in Britain began to respond with hostilities towards this invasion. In other words, here was a bunch of people that just set up, you know, a little township in New York. Was this an invasion or was this just trying to establish? Didn't matter. It was an invasion. They considered it an invasion. The removal of the Dutch influence was hastened due to a sundry of factors. The primary factor was the abundance of British influence in North America and the greater desire of the Dutch to secure full control from British harassments over their colony, Suriname, in South Africa or South America. So in other words, they moved some of these people out and other people decided to stay. That's one of the reasons why New York actually still has a little bit of a Dutch background, because those people who decided to stay. But still, even as a colony, and it was fundamental in our history, that you just can't invade and start getting your toehold and then start trying to create a sub-colony in our colony. Period. Whereas the threat of an invasion was not viewed as simple one accomplished by military force, a social, cultural, or political invasions can be equally dangerous to a nation. During the Virginia ratification debates, James Madison pointed to the threat of an invasion of enemies, stating, quote, Congress ought to have the power to establish a uniform discipline throughout the states and to provide for the execution of laws to suppress insurrections and repel invasions. These are the only cases wherein they can interfere with the militia, and the obvious necessity of their having power over them in these cases must convince any reflecting mind. Without uniformity of disciplined military bodies would be incapable of action without a general controlling power to call forth the strength of the Union to repel invasions. The country might be overrun and conquered by foreign enemies. He didn't say military or anything. Anybody that, like the Tories were considered a foreign entity because they supported Britain. This is why what happened in the Tory Acts, what happened after the Revolutionary War, what did we do? We repelled 100,000 Tories. This was even before the Constitution. This is how fundamental this concept is. You have to start looking at, you know, the fact that when we have the law, when we have the precedence, when we actually have the history that absolutely supports everything that we're doing. I mean, this is they kicked the Tories out. That's it. The law demands repelling. It doesn't say, oh, well, you know, you got to pay a seven. No, no, no. As a matter of fact, there's no $7,000 under the Constitution. These are laws made up by the courts so that there could be money involved, because it's all about money. No reference to an armed force, military, period, in that description from Madison. And whereas a threat to national sovereignty by an invasion, as history has proven, were not limited to military forces, a cultural, social, or political invasion can equally be destructive to a nation's sovereignty those who illegally and willfully enter into a nation, deliberately bypassing the specific laws and process of immigration to exploit its economical, political, and other opportunities, must be treated as much of a threat to a nation's security as an invading military force. This is an invasion where people are not just hiding in plain sight, but stealing and forging identifications, thus committing additional crimes and permanently remaining in violation of the fundamental laws of immigration. And whereas the invaders coming into the United States do not assimilate, insist on retaining their language and culture, and try to directly engage in political processes by unlawfully obtaining to fraudulent identification, voting, and seeking to undermine and defy our laws as well as our Constitution. In other words, these are political combatants and invaders and so forth. And actually, I'll even say this. This is an insurrection by definition. Do you understand that? Because an insurrection is actually attacking the Constitution. Whereas this invasion has been allowed by and supported by Congress to exist for almost four decades, where many invaders have had children while illegally here in the United States. In accordance with the 14th Amendment, Section 1, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States by where they reside. In other words, if they're born by foreign people who are here illegally, they're not under the jurisdiction of the United States. We've covered this several times, especially because of Kamala. So, therefore, a person must be a citizen considered under jurisdiction. Thus, children born to two parents who are not under the legal jurisdiction of the United States are and cannot be citizens of the United States. Consequently, this clause strictly addressed the slaves and Indians that were under the jurisdiction of the United States at the time of the amendment, since they were recognized for apportionment or of representation or being held by the federal law of, you know, the Indian reservations and so forth. And I'm looking, I got 2 minutes here, and I'm not even halfway through, folks. We have a lot of different citations. As a matter of fact, as I go through, we're citing the Constitution of the United States out of the ratification debates. We're actually we're reading some of these things, because the next citation I give you is the 14th Amendment, Section 2, regarding apportionment, and only U.S. citizens are to receive apportionment. How long has Jimmy Carter, since 1980, and still to this day, they're counting illegals for apportionment? Read Section 2 of the 14th Amendment. It lays out that they cannot be counted, period. Whereas the 14th Amendment, or the 14th, 19th, or the 15th, 19th, 24th, and 26th, which I already covered, talks about voting, that they have to be a U.S. citizen. In addition, within Dennis L. Murphy's published article titled "The Exclusion of Illegal Aliens from the Reapportionment Base, A Question of Representation," he clarifies the fact that in 1980, how they started violating this thing called the apportionment portion of the 14th Amendment by allowing illegals. This is how California had a hyper amount of representation, because they were counting the illegals. And as you go through the United States, they're still doing this, even though California today has lost 11 representatives based on the last census, because there's been that big of an exodus out of California. That many people have left out of California, but there's still remaining more and more illegals in California. Folks, we are in a constitutional crisis, and this is just one of the problems. This isn't dealing with the chemtrails overhead. This is why we have a repository of petitions, a repository, not these hot issues that you're mad about, you know, immigration. This is all about the entire comprehensive summation of all of the constitutional crises. We want to make sure that you have access to all of these petitions so that you can create clear context to how badly our Constitution is being violated. It's that simple, folks. And when you speak on the law, you have the granite underneath you. I'm J.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.